There are at least two kinds of wrestling. The first is the kind that you find in high school and college gymnasiums. Young men of roughly the same weight meet in the middle of a mat to hold and push an opponent. The goal is to get the other guy down and hold him there. This sport is officiated, it's sanctioned, it's in the Olympics. And then there's pro wrestling. Sure, it's officiated, but it's also loud, unruly, and more entertainment than sport.
Once again, the killer, and Gagne is getting groggy.
Here in Minnesota, there's a rich tradition of pro wrestling.
In this corner, from Minneapolis, weighing 220 pounds, Vern Gagne.
Gagne graduated from Robbinsdale High School in suburban Minneapolis. He played football at the University of Minnesota, and he was drafted by the Chicago Bears. But he's best known as a wrestler, and he helped make Minnesota a hotbed of pro wrestling by starting the American Wrestling Association. Then in the 1970s came this man.
The chump will run, the chump will hide, and I'll have to chase him down. Vance, that's what you
Jesse,
should tell the people
the body,
out there.
Ventura.
Ooh, look at that.
Jesse the Body Ventura rose to national fame as a flamboyant pro wrestler who loved flexing his muscles.
Check it out. I get more beautiful looking every day, yeah.
He settled here in Minnesota, and as his career in the ring began to fade, he turned to politics. In 1998, we elected him governor. These days, professional wrestling, although not as popular as it used to be, can still be found in Minnesota. I'm Todd Melby. This is Miniculture. I'm joined by Brittany. Hi, Brittany.
Hey, Todd Melby. And it's mad, crazy, and wonderful in the world of independent wrestling.
Brittany has spent a lot of time attending pro wrestling at VFWs, American Legion halls, and church basements. And she's here to tell us that independent pro wrestling is still a thing here in Minnesota.
So I went there to kind of investigate the wrestlers. But what I found out, because I'm sitting in the audience, the people I actually got to know were the wrestling fans. And they don't hold back.
You suck, boy, man! You wrestle like a girl!
He is a girl!
Yeah, that's right, he's a girl!
In Midwest independent pro wrestling, the relationship between wrestler and fan is tight.
Check his diaper!
Check his diaper! That's right, kick him!
Come on, ref, tickle him! Tickle him, ref! Tickle him, ref!
Here's an example. Brian Dorn, a.k.a. Ian the X-Men Xavier, once dragged his butt across a whiteboard on which was drawn the American flag.
And I was just doing this to get a rise out of the fans, and did I ever. During the match, I had beer bottles thrown at me. We leave, we started walking to the car. Now, I used to carry a big goalie stick with me. I had to use that to get to my car.
That's dedication for you. Once the fan throws down his or her money and wangles a seat near the ring, a deal is struck. The wrestler promises to thrash his opponent with as much swagger and physical drama as a Roman gladiator, minus the death blow. And the fan promises to scream like hell.
Yeah! I said hit him harder!
It's the kind of relationship that doesn't make a lot of sense to outsiders. The wrestlers shout at the fans.
You shut your mouth!
And the fans shout back.
He's not a wrestler, but neither are you!
If they got a chance, they'd string each other's guts on tennis rackets. Or so you'd think. But every weekend, the wrestlers put on their gimmicks and jump in the ring, and the fans take their seats, waiting for that perfect moment to sling a freshly honed insult.
Enough of that! I came here to see some wrestling! Kick his butt! Kick his butt!
The Twin Cities independent wrestling scene is small enough that it doesn't take long to get a hook on each of the wrestlers. Cody Rice shaves his chest hair in the shape of a heart. Doug the Space Alien tickles his opponents. Danny Duggan never goes anywhere without his fanny pack. And John Johnson looks good in baby oil. But you also get to know the fans. Trent and his little boy with his collection of wrestling belts. Johnny and his mom, Gail, one of the best hecklers. And then there's Michael Pam.
Oh, that's Craven Knight. He's one of my favorite wrestlers. And his face is dug. Oh, my God. Thank goodness I'm sitting in the second row.
Why?
Because I don't like Doug. You saw what he did last month. He stuck his butt in my face, and I kicked it.
Once he walks in the door, Michael Pam enters what he calls Michael mode. In Michael mode, he's liable to say anything, but there's a certain phrase he's made his own.
You know what I'm talking
about? Yes. You mean the tiny wiener chants? Actually, I just came up because I figured if I chant that, then they'll get into my face. And that's what I want. it's just, it gets them fired up.
Right before Christmas, one of those fired up wrestlers gave Michael a present.
And I declined that at first. But that bag was full of wieners, and they started throwing it at me. Oh, my God. Everybody was laughing.
Cocktail wieners. Very tiny. The other Michael you'll meet at Twin Cities matches is Michael Kunze.
When I'm not here, I'm the shy, quiet one. But when I'm here, I let loose, man.
And that's the way you like it.
That's the way I love it.
Like most everyone else here, he's got a day job and bills and a life outside, but this is his time to let it all out.
Come on, Bundy, you can do this. Either that or he'll eat you. Check his man boobs.
Hey, Michael.
Get up, bounce his man boobs, Bundy.
Yeah.
Bundy, bounce his man boobs.
Yeah.
Oh. You better go for x-rays on that one.
Aristotle said that theater is cathartic. It lets people work out their emotions in a safe setting. Wrestling is like that. But at these small Minnesota venues, there's something more. The showing up every week and knowing who you'll see and hear, the shouts of Tiny Wiener, the little gestures that make you feel you're part of something. Like at intermission when Dirty Ernie helps Johnny into the ring, so that the young fan who has cerebral palsy can try his hand at pinning a wrestler. That's a perk of being a regular. And when the show's over, something else happens. Michael Kunze.
People that you're heckling just 5 minutes before, and you're telling them, get out of here, and you're cheating, and all those other things. You come out 5 minutes later, and it's like, hey, how's it going? Good match, man. You know? Yeah, I saw you at the last one. It's fun how you can kind of do that, and they don't take it personal, but yet they make sure they add it into their performance, just like we do as fans. Oh, put that thing away! I'd rather see you now.
And speaking of fans, we've got this woman named Carol Castle, and we're going to hear a couple of clips from Carol. She's a local woman who's really, really into wrestling, started the Minnesota Wrestling Hall of Fame, which we'll hear about in just a moment. But first, let's discover how Carol became a fan.
I remember specifically Larry Henning and Handsome Harley Race, and I loved to hate them. And I always thought that Larry Henning was going to hurt Vern Gagne. It was so real to me. And so much in who I was at the time, I developed ulcers when I was 4. And I had those ulcers for about 3 or 4 years. And it was all because of their tag team. We're so good at what they did. And I would just be so enraged. And it wasn't until Larry Henning was wrestling in Robbinsdale for a community event, and somebody kicked his car. And I had my brothers and sisters with me, and I went up, and I said, you can't kick the car. That's not right. And when I stuck up for him, that was the end of my ulcers. And
you stuck up for the bad guy?
I stuck up for the bad guy, but I didn't want any harm. I wanted him to keep doing his job because he did it so well. To get someone to the point where they're enraged or have ulcers or is crying or so upset with the turn of events in the ring, they're doing their job well.
So from the age of 4 until however old she is today, that's decades and decades,
yeah,
that she's been a fan that long.
And it takes somebody like that to start something like the Minnesota Hall of Fame, because that's basically built on one person and her desire to see something there that wasn't there before. to recognize all these wrestlers? Because I don't think we recognize them in Minnesota.
Robbinsdale is the birthplace of Minnesota wrestling. They have the very first high school coach, the very first high school wrestling program in Minnesota. So it's the birthplace of Minnesota wrestling. And Vern Gagne died, and he's been like a personal hero and a friend of my family's most of my life. And I sat through the wake many, many hours talking to friends, sat through the funeral, and when I was driving home, and it was a good half-hour drive, I realized I had found out there was no Hall of Fame for the Minnesota wrestlers. And we have wrestling royalty. We have the Gagnes, we have the Hennings, we have Barry Darso, we have Tom Zink. We have such a huge pedigree. We've had politicians, Al Franken, Paul Wellstone, Wellstone Boys, have all excelled and become, you know, state champions, NCAA champions. Dave Wellstone told me a story the other day about his dad putting a wrestling mat in his crib, because Paul Wellstone was wrestling for NCAA championship, and his son was born, you know, when he was 18. So he was still actively an amateur wrestler when his son was born. And both sons, Mark and Dave, are great guys. And they wrestled and they coached. And one is still coaching to this day.
So why do you think Minnesota has such a rich wrestling tradition?
You know, part of it goes back to certain individuals like Vern Gagne. And not many people are probably old enough to remember this, but he was one of the stars of Golden Age TV. And so people all over the country got to know who Vern Gagne was. But he came back to Minnesota and he started the AWA, the American Wrestling Association, which was huge in its day. It had a televised program. Hulk Hogan ended up at the AWA because his career was floundering and Vern Gagne was running it. And wrestlers knew that Vern Gagne knew how to turn like a good wrestler into a star. And it's all about creating that personality.
It's this wonderful combination of sport, theater, and capturing the moment. And speaking of capturing the moment, there's this great bit of tape that you've got about something that happened at Madison Square Garden back in the day.
Yeah, and this story is told by Billy Blaze, one of the bad guy wrestlers on the Minnesota scene. There's so many stories that go around about the moments in wrestling that you will not find in a baseball game.
Things go awry, and that's where the gold is. Like, I'll tell you, I used to be partners with Kenny Patera, and we were on the road selling shows. He's a former Olympic strongman who became a really super popular, well-known wrestler. Guy, he's the first guy to press 500 pounds over his head in the history of the world. Kenny goes, you know, Billy, he had this like nasally voice, you know, Billy, one of my first matches was against your mentor, Larry Malenko, you know, Boris Malenko's real name. And I go, oh, yeah, Kenny. He goes, it was one of his last matches. What, did you kill him? He goes, no, Billy. And Kenny told me that he was so excited to wrestle Larry that he slapped him so hard in the face that he knocked his false teeth out of his mouth in Madison Square Garden. So the false teeth went flying through the air. It was surreal, Billy. It was, oh my God, the teeth went flying. They landed in the middle of the ring. Everyone was quiet in the audience. The ref froze up. I froze up. Larry just looked at those teeth and he looked at the people. And he bent over and picked up those false teeth and held them up to the people. And then he came over and he opened up my head and he just kept working me over with those false teeth. And he took what was, a weakness and he made it into his greatest strength. There were so many good matches on that card that day, but all anybody could talk about was the denture match.
Let's meet Billy Blaze.
Where do dreams begin?
My mother's father, he was a farmer in Wisconsin, 200 acres.
You might say Bill Boria's wrestling dream began with his grandpa.
How do you do? This is Mal Alberts, bidding you welcome to Wrestling Champions.
You know, it wasn't really my thing, it was my grandfather's thing. But I loved my grandfather, and I could sit there and watch wrestling with him. And he was a huge fan. If anyone said the F word to him, when I say the F word, I mean fake.
That's what's on tap for tonight, so stick around, you're going to enjoy it, I know.
People have been saying the F word in professional wrestling circles since catch wrestling, Irish collar and elbow, and other folk styles of wrestling emerged out of the 19th and early 20th century carnival circuit to organize as a sport. There was always something suspect about wrestling with its stage theatrics and submission holds that were so big they played well even to fans seated at the back of the hall.
However, as is Gorgeous George's custom, he will not wrestle in any ring unless it is perfumed and disinfected.
By the 1950s, wrestler Gorgeous George had perfected the role of the effete heel villain for the new medium of TV. Another wrestling star of early TV graduated from Robbinsdale High School, just north of the Twin Cities.
In this corner, from Minneapolis, Vern Gagne.
And it was Gagne who in 1960 became co-owner of the American Wrestling Association, AWA, which headquartered out of Minneapolis until its close in 1991.
Because of the AWA being here, there was like 20% of the world's pro wrestling stars. They're living in our community.
Bill Boria grew up in North Minneapolis when the AWA was in full swing.
When I was growing up, I worked out at Jesse Ventura's Muscle Junction, so I got to meet him and a lot of the other pro wrestlers would come in. I was 15 years old, and you'd see all these guys on TV, and then they'd be working out at the gym, like, you know, Kenny Patera, who I later on became partners with, which was interesting, and I got to meet him there.
Dreams don't evolve in a vacuum. A lot of NHL players come out of Canada because a lot have already come out of there. The same can be said for Minnesota and wrestling. Boria studied theater in high school and college. He won natural bodybuilding competitions. He kickboxed. He also got a job at a gym where the wrestler clientele told him he should maybe think about training to be a wrestler. In 1988, he did, under the name Billy Blaze.
Billy Blaze, an outstanding young competitor in professional wrestling, gives 150% every time he's in the ring, obviously keeps in phenomenal shape.
Professional wrestling was officially outed in 1989 as sports entertainment. As if the fans didn't already know that what they liked best in a match was not move after move, but well-executed move and counter-move thrown in with a little drama. Boria's training as an actor helped him develop Billy Blaze as the wrestler fans loved to boo.
Shut your mouth, boy. You're going to see that exit door? You're going to go through it. Okay, the only way you'll get back in here is by paying again. And I know you don't have enough allowance, so sit down.
At primetime wrestling events at Bloomington's Knights of Columbus Hall, Blaze in spandex and a scowl, cheats, throws temper tantrums, and lays into fans.
I play a heel. I play a bad guy, a cowardly villain. See, these younger kids, when they start out, they want to be the heels because it's cool. They think it's cool, but they also want to win all their matches, and they don't want to act like a coward. They don't want to have any weaknesses. They don't want to have any kryptonite. And they just don't get it. You can't have it both. I mean, you gotta, unfortunately, like when my head split open, it would have been a lot more effective if I was a good guy because the people would have got behind. Look at him, he's not stopping. He's, what a hero. Whereas for me, I had to be extra vicious and do horrible things with while I was bleeding so I didn't get the people's sympathy because I don't want the people's sympathy. If I do, then they're not going to get as behind the baby face, the good guy, and the drama, and it's going to be flat.
You don't find many wrestlers who've been in the ring as long as Boria. He quit for a while. He took acting gigs. He even filmed wrestlers for a documentary he's producing called Jobbers. But he came back, and fans welcomed him, because everybody needs someone to hate.
Nobody can be a better Billy Blaze than yours truly right here. Nobody can do what I do. No one. And do I have a lot of pride in that? Yeah. Would I like to find other areas of my life where I can excel to that degree? Absolutely. But until I find him, I'm probably going to keep wrestling, because it's too much fun, and there's so many things to discover, and there's so much magic. That's magic.
You're listening to Miniculture on KFAI. I'm Todd Melby. Let's meet somebody else who has the spotlight. on him and who's had the spotlight on him for years and years now, a wrestler by the name of Spider Baby.
Well, Spider Baby is recognized by Out Magazine as the first pro wrestler to come out.
So he's gay.
He's gay. He's a gay wrestler and big deal. But at the time when he came out, there weren't other wrestlers. You know, obviously there were gay wrestlers, but they weren't going to mention it. Although they might play up the gay aspect, it's still gay within a macho environment.
In professional wrestling, the biggest challenge isn't winning. It's getting noticed.
And now presenting.
In 1938, that was on the mind of a Minneapolis promoter when he pitted Joe Reno against Roughhouse Ross in a ring filled with 250 gallons of ice cream. The press loved it, and the freeze match wasn't something fans would forget soon.
Gorgeous George's collection of robes totals over 100 beautiful robes.
The best self-promoter of the 1950s had to be Gorgeous George. Born George Wagner, he pranced into the ring. Amid a cloud of perfume, he tossed tiny little Georgie pins into the audience and broke into tantrums when he didn't get his way. And just to make sure he got enough ink, he invited reporters to the beauty parlor to watch him get his hair curled.
Take a look at Gorgeous George's hair now. It's prepared by Franklin and Joseph, two of the outstanding beauticians and hairdressers.
Though the gorgeous one died in 1963, fans growing up in the 70s, 80s, and 90s were familiar with his legacy, if not his name. Terrence Greep was one of those fans.
He's wrestling's first superstar who invented this dynamic of creating a villain that the audience will pay money to see lose or to see get beat up. And he presented this overtly effeminate, parenthetically gay, and yet overtly gay, in a time when the love that doth not speak its name doth not speak its name, the 1950s.
In 2003, Greep made his wrestling debut as Tommy the Spider Baby Saturday. Not a big deal, you'd think. Just another hopeful trying to make his name.
Well, Out Magazine found out about it, and they ended up covering it, and it turned into a national story. The local Fox, they covered it. A lot of other people covered it. It turned into a fairly big story.
Kick his butt, Spider Baby! That's not cheating, okay?
National press. And Greep didn't even have to take a dip in ice cream. So why the fuss?
Out Magazine recognizes me as the first openly gay pro wrestler to come out on a national venue.
Not that there hadn't been openly gay wrestlers before Greep. There were. But the difference was they didn't come out in the press as gay. Greep's coming out at the very beginning of his career forced him to contend with Gorgeous George and the bad guy wrestlers who'd followed in his wake.
These wrestlers were just bad because they were gay. It's as simple as that, you know. And it was, in a way, a very lazy way for a bad guy to, as we say in the business, get over as a villain. You just wear feather boas to the ring. You just, wear a fancy robe or whatever. Act prissy. And something that's been very important to me is not to be the gay wrestler. Although, once you sign off on that, you pretty much are. But I've never been, you know, the pink flamingo. I've never been the rainbow arches or anything like that. You know, Spider Baby, there's nothing intrinsically gay about that gimmick.
But for one fan, at least, having a gay wrestler like Spider Baby meant an awful lot.
He's got that classic belt right up under his flappy nipples thing, flannel shirt, the baseball cap. And I could tell he was gay as a Christmas goose, though he did not look the part. And this old fan was telling me how, you know, when he started off as a wrestling fan, Gorgeous George was kind of his only role model and a pretty negative version of gay men at that. And he kind of looked down and he looked up and his eyes welled up with tears and he said, "I've been waiting for you for my entire life." And I said, "Oh, well, that's great." And so I got all choked up and I gave him a big hug and I said, "Well, thanks for waiting for me." And I shook his hand. I said, "Well, I'm sure I'll see you around at the matches, because the key to a good pro wrestling match is knowing when to end it." And I thought, I'm not going to top this emotional reaction. So I just excused myself and I went to the back. But it's haunted me in a good way ever since, in that when I did what I did, when I came out before my first match, when I was covered by Out Magazine and all the rest, my intention was to offer myself up as a possible role model to teenage boys who were also in love with wrestling and were having the same problem I had and this other guy had of, you know, extremely negative stereotypes in pro wrestling. Here's a wrestler who's saying he's openly gay, and his gimmick has nothing to do with being gay. Doo-dah, the end. Being gay is not so bad, kids. That was it. The idea of a guy in his 70s being moved by that had never occurred to me, and probably was the single most touching interaction I've had with a fan, and I think about it fairly often.
This is Britty for KFAI.
That's an incredibly touching story.
Mm-hmm. What doesn't come out in that is that today you go to a wrestling match in Minnesota and Spider Baby's there. Fans all know he's gay. Nobody cares. Nobody cares. It doesn't matter to them. So this man in his 70s, he has been waiting all this time for his role model.
Six championship class matches will happen before the 20-man battle royal. Yes, the first time ever, a 20-man battle royal. $100,000 to the winner. On that card will be 498-pound Abdullah the Butcher, 320-pound King Kong Brody, 300-pound American Dream Dusty Rhodes, the only bruiser, Great Wilbur Snyder, seven-time world champion Harley Race, Blackjack Mulligan, King Kong Brody, Big Bad Bob Duncan, the Ayatollah Jerry Blackwell, the Crusher, the Baron, plus many more. Don't miss it.
This is just fantastic. And one of the things you were telling me about is how there are competing leagues. It's not just like one league today that is, you know, makes a circuit, that there are multiple promoters.
In Minnesota, yeah, there are, I think there are over a dozen promoters just in Minnesota.
Yeah, so they're only charging people $10 a head and paying wrestlers $50 or so a night. So it's not like there are giant costs associated with it.
Yeah, maybe you have to have some beer.
Right, beer helps. Britty, wrestling correspondent for KFAI's Miniculture. You can check out her stories at the Miniculture SoundCloud site. It's just check out Miniculture there on SoundCloud. Also check us out on Facebook. That's facebook.com/miniculture.
One, two, three. The match is Ganya's. I don't think Bruiser knows it.
That's all for this edition of Miniculture. Thanks to Britty for joining us. This program is made possible by a grant from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.